I'm John Krall. The image of the crossroads is almost as deeply ingrained in Indiana's and Indianapolis's history as the word Hoosier and the poet James Whitcomb Riley. The crossroads speak of being at the center of things, but they also carry with them the implied story of a journey, of places we have been and the places we can go. Today on No Limits, we will kick off Indy Talks, a year-long community conversation about things that matter to Indianapolis and Central Indiana by talking about Indy at the crossroads. Our distinguished guests include Brian Payne of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, Tom Morales of the Morales Group, and Matt Kinghorn of the Indiana Business Research Center. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and executive editor of thestatehousefile.com. We are talking today, kicking off this year's Indy Talks, the theme of which is Indy at the Crossroads. And we're going to be talking about what the numbers tell us, sort of where Indiana is right now, talking about the challenges, the opportunities, the problems, perhaps the missed opportunities in some cases, with our distinguished panel of guests, Brian Payne, who is the president, CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks for inviting me.
It's good to have you here. Tom Morales, who is the president of the Morales Group. Tom, good to have you here.
John, thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Oh, we will enjoy it. And on the phone, Matt Kinghorn, who is an analyst and demographer for the Indiana Business Research Center. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. My pleasure.
It's good to have you here. Matt, I think we're going to start with you because, frankly, part of the point here is that the numbers are supposed to tell us something, and you're the guy with the numbers. So,
that's right.
So why don't we start real basically with what do the numbers tell us right now?
Well, I think that the title of your series, Indiana Crossroads, is an apt title because I think that the numbers show that. I think, just broadly, I'm looking at Marion County, at least specifically. The county grew by about 40,000 residents. That's about a 5% increase. That's a little bit slower than we saw during the 1990s, where the population grew by about 8%, but it's faster than we saw during the 1980s and during the 1970s, where Indianapolis population actually declined. So it's growing, but not as fast as we saw during the 1990s. Kind of digging into the numbers, though, we see some divergent trends. So even though the population has grown, Indianapolis is still experiencing a net out-migration of residents. So more people move out each year than move in. So over the last 10 years or so, there's been a net out-migration of about 30,000 residents. But that number has been more than offset by an increase or a natural increase, which means more births than deaths.
To simplify that a little bit, what we're saying is that we're still losing, people are moving away from Central Indiana, but we're replacing them with children.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay,
and what does, and again, to kind of recap here so that people get it, what we have seen is that we're still, the population's growing for the Indianapolis area, but not as rapidly as it did in the 1990s. The past two decades, though, sort of reversed a trend from the 70s and 80s, though, when we were losing population.
Yeah, that's right. So 1970s, we're losing population, and then the 80s, we turned the boat a little bit, grew, but grew at a pretty slow pace. But then in the 1990s, the population increase really picked up. But then it's kind of not as fast this past decade. So
who are the people we're losing?
Well, if you look at the kind of the migration patterns, you see that, kind of looking at it by age, you see that Indianapolis attracts a lot of young adults, so people in their 20s. Mm-hmm. But then you start to see a real decline once you get, the population above the age of 30 or so. So families move out. That's you pretty much see a net out-migration for every age group above the age of 30. And then, of course, for some of the younger children as well, so it's kind of the families moving.
And what the families, do we have any idea where they're going?
Well, according to data from the Internal Revenue Service are able to track by where you say you live each year when you file your taxes. It shows that about 50% of, or a little over 50% of the people that leave Marion County remain in the larger Indianapolis metro area. So that includes all the donut counties.
Okay.
And then some others, you know, you get about another 15% that stay in Indiana, but outside of the Indy metro area. And then about 16 or 17%, you know, head down south. So that could be anywhere from Kentucky down to Florida. So kind of in the southern region of the U.S.
And all of us who deal with this know what we mean by the donut counties, but there may be a few people out there who don't get the concept. They're the counties that surround Marion County and Indianapolis, kind of form a circle or around it. Tom Morales, what does this say to you in terms of the migration pattern about where Indianapolis is right now?
John, I think the migration is, first I want to start out with this. When I heard the titles Indy at the Crossroads, I really believe that Indianapolis especially has been a destination now for many people. It used to be that logistically we had a lot of trucks and everything coming through this, but now there are those people that are stopping and staying and making this a destination. But part of the migration that I see is that, as Matt was talking, is I know the net results are one thing, but I also know the diversity has changed dramatically here in Indianapolis as compared to what it was in the past. So the migration that I see is sometimes from other ethnic groups that are coming from the larger cities or other cities that, again, they're coming for the same reasons that I came here and raised my family here, is because it's safe. It's an unbelievable growth in a lot of different areas, from the arts to sports to anything else and stuff. So,
Brian Payne, what do you see in these numbers? I mean, what?
Well, we're focused on how do we make Indianapolis a city, a destination city for highly educated, highly creative, and community-minded citizens. And what I see in these numbers, first of all, I think the numbers overall are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're the star of the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the star.
Yeah, we're not Cleveland.
We're not even Chicago. Chicago dropped in the 2000s, Chicago, the great Chicago that we all admire on so many levels, they lost population. So we are the star of the Midwest. Now, I'm never satisfied with that. I want to be the star of America. I want Indianapolis to be the star of America. But what I see is we're losing families. Why is that? Because families that have a choice don't see that our education choices are good enough. That's the biggest issue I see in this. The other is, I think along with that, we're losing some of our upper middle class and our wealthiest citizens to the suburbs, continuing to do that. And that's a concern because those people support the tax base that we need to keep making progress in Indianapolis.
Why do we lose them, Brian?
I think some of it's education. I think some of it is that, you know, if you're looking for a new house that has 5,000 square feet, and luckily the trends are working now against that. People are looking to have smaller homes.
Yeah.
I think people are valuing older homes, you know, more historic homes. So the trends are maybe on our side, but still, it hasn't turned around to the point where a lot of people who have wealth want to build a new home that has 5,000 square feet, and there really aren't that many places to do that in Indianapolis. So they go to the suburbs where there's open lots.
We are talking today on No Limits about Indy at the Crossroads. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Matt Kinghorn, I want to follow up on that. Does the research, do the numbers show us that it does seem like there's a break point from what you're telling us, that once people start to have families, they will leave the Indianapolis area, or a number of them do leave. Is education the primary reason, or are there other factors?
Well, I think that education certainly would be probably the chief factor. I think that there's, you know, there's all several factors that you can kind of put under the umbrella of, you know, what people will call quality of life or that sort of thing. So, you know, Brian mentioned the 5,000 square foot home or the large yards, kind of the quiet streets and all that sort of thing. You know, some of the other amenities like large parks or things like that can all kind of play into that. I think it becomes a mindset when people have seen that for so long that when you get to a certain point that's what you look to achieve. And so I think that we could see that ebb a little bit, but I think that still is kind of a dominant factor.
Well, let's take the other part of the equation that Brian was talking about, which is that we're outperforming other cities in basically the Midwest right now.
Right.
Do the numbers tell us why? What it is that we're doing? And then I'm going to take it to Tom and Brian to get their analysis and their interpretations of that.
Well, I think it's interesting. There was about a year or so ago, there was a report out by the Brookings Institute that kind of looked at all the large metropolitan areas in the U.S. and kind of put them into different boxes, gave them different titles. Some were kind of the Clevelands and Detroits and Gary's that we all know about that were kind of the struggling manufacturing base. But then they also had a group called the New Heartland, and that was, Indianapolis was the leader there. But then there's also cities like Columbus, Ohio, and Madison, Wisconsin. And I think that you see there is that even though that those cities are in kind of the what we think of as the industrial Midwest, they weren't kind of necessarily the centers of manufacturing that maybe you saw in Milwaukee, Detroit, Cleveland, and whatnot, and they have a greater economic diversity. So you think of the three that I mentioned: Columbus, Ohio, and Madison, Wisconsin, and Indianapolis are all the state capitals. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot a lot of professional employment that goes along with that. They also have large research universities. Madison and Columbus have their kind of the state flagships, and IUPUI is kind of at that same level. So there's just a greater diversity in some of these metro areas that are letting us propel us ahead, I should say. Yeah.
Tom Morales, what do you think it accounts for the growth? Why we're sort of bucking the trend in the Midwest?
I still believe that when we look at this city, we see a lot of the changes that have occurred. I think of the cultural awareness that we have from the museums to the arts to a lot of the changes, even our sports capital, as we call it. Most of the time, people are always looking, especially in the big cities, to offer a complete scenario of options that they can have. The reality of it is that we're constantly growing and just moving in that direction. When Brian was talking about the professional and the educational, well, we provide a lot of corporate entities. Now, we're still what we consider a logistical crossroads of transportation from goods from one point to the other. But the reality of it is that we're back into providing a lot more of those people staying here. And there's we don't have the manufacturing, but we do have another sense of supply chain that's really providing a lot of growth for us.
Brian Payne, you are, in addition to the many other things that you have to do with the Central Indiana Community Foundation, you're sort of an advocate for the city and its cultural life and all that. What do you talk about when you're talking about that with people who are curious about Indianapolis or someone who might want to invest in the community in some fashion?
Well, we are a huge cheerleader for the city of Indianapolis at a national level and as well as an advocate at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's what Tom said is absolutely true. The tremendous focus on arts and culture and sports. There's so many good parts of our quality of life. I think our secret sauce, though, that we don't talk about enough is that we have this incredible can-do partnership spirit. That's what I think ultimately differentiates ourselves. I mean, I was just thinking a lot about the Super Bowl these days, as everyone is. But to me, tonight I'm going to the opening that we've supported, the opening of the Chase Legacy Community Center at Arsenal Tech High School. This is the Super Bowl East Side Legacy Project. No other city has ever done the kind of community focus of a Super Bowl. So we're doing it differently. We take every opportunity and we build community. That's unique in this country. I mean, America is the best country in the world at doing that. I think we're the best city in America at doing that.
We are talking about Indy at the Crossroads as part of the Indy Talk series here on No Limits Day. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question to WFYI via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. We're talking with Brian Payne, Tom Morales, and Matt Kinghorn. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and the executive editor of thestatehousefile.com. We are talking today about Indy at the Crossroads. Our guests are Brian Payne, president, CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, Tom Morales, who is the president of the Morales Group, and Matt Kinghorn, who is an analyst and demographer with the Indiana Business Research Center. Sorry, the remnants of my cold here are affecting my enunciation. We have gotten a question from a listener, and I would invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. This comes from Isaac, who says he's curious about the growth of Indy's urban areas in comparison to other cities of our size. We've sort of talked about the flight from, are there certain parts of Indy that are growing more rapidly than others, and what accounts for that? I'll start again with you, Matt, since I think you're the guy who's got the numbers, and then I'll lean on Tom and Brian to give us context.
Okay. Looking at Indianapolis specifically, kind of breaking down, population growth has been kind of the quickest over the last 10 years down in the southern parts of Marion County, so areas like Perry Township and Franklin Township. So that would include, you know, large parts of Beech Grove and Southport and whatnot. So those that kind of area of the city has seen the strongest growth over the last 10 years. And then if you look out into the suburbs, then there's been, you know, really kind of eye-popping growth and, you know, continued eye-popping growth in Hamilton County, you know, Carmel and Fishers and whatnot, and as well as Hendricks County. So, you know, those two counties kind of all decade long, or really for the past couple of decades, have been among the highest growing or fastest growing counties in the country, and definitely some of the highest growing, kind of not in the south or the west, the real fast growing parts of the country. So that's where we're seeing the greatest growth right now.
So within the county, it's on the south side, and
right.
In the sort of larger urban area, Hamilton County by and large, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Hamilton County, you know, grew by about 50% over the last 10 years, so
okay.
added 90,000 residents.
And do we know what accounts for the growth on the south side?
Well, I think, you know, I would speculate that it's just that there's space there, but there's more developable land would be my guess, so that there might have been more development in that part of the city.
Okay. So. Brian Payne, what do these numbers tell you?
Well, it tells me that you know, the suburbs are, as much as I'm an advocate for urban areas,
mm-hmm.
The suburbs are still a huge draw for people.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, I live in Meridian Kessler, and I have this mm-hmm. argument all the time with even my wife, as well as friends, that I believe I live in an urban neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they said, well, you've got a yard, you know, you mow the lawn. I said, yeah, well, I can walk, yeah, maybe, but I can walk to stores and
mm-hmm.
Hardware stores and restaurants, and I can ride my bike wherever I want to go. I feel like I'm in an urban area. I think urban areas are becoming more and more attractive, certainly to the young professionals. One thing that
mm-hmm.
Matt didn't mention, and I think this is true, Matt, I read it in USA Today, which did a nice job on following the census, mm-hmm. is that Indianapolis, we had the second largest percentage growth
mm-hmm.
for young professionals moving and living in downtown. St. Louis actually had the first. Now, the raw numbers, you know, it's still a small amount compared to a Boston or New York, of course. But as far as growth percentage-wise, we were doing very well in the 2000s. So more young professionals are moving downtown. But again, they hit an age where they're starting to have children that are school age, and their first – not only – actually, you know what? It's not always even their first thought, because I have
mm-hmm.
a number of friends who have children that are turning 4 and 5 and 6. They would like to stay – in Indianapolis and send their kids to some of the magnet schools.
Mm-hmm.
And the magnet schools have long waiting lists, like School 84 at 57th and Central. And so they can't get their kids into the schools they want, even IPS schools they want.
Mm-hmm.
So then they move because of access.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always choice. Sometimes it's just access. But that school problem is a big problem for families in Marion County.
Tom Morales, do you agree that the school problem is the overarching one for...
I think if we were going to focus on something, John, that I think Brian is very correct in the stuff that specifically when we read what we read today, as far as the concerns, whether it's parents, whether it's the growth or the graduation rates for a lot of different groups as such. And I feel, but I also feel that, as Matt, maybe you can share a little bit about this, is that when we talk about growth in those certain areas, I also know that the diversity and the different immigrant that has occurred here in Indianapolis, there are certain pockets that have grown dramatically in the South Side as versus other areas. And so I don't know that that's part of the, and I know when you guys break it up into the legislative redistricting, there's four or five, six tables that you guys have to go through in order to put all this together as such. But I'm just wondering if that's not part of what's happening, is just the migration of certain immigrants that are just, and again, from the professional level down and such. So.
Where are, picking up, Matt, on Tom's question there, the people, are we seeing an influx of immigrants here, and where are they coming from?
Well, we're certainly seeing an influx of the Hispanic population, so whether or not, you know, they may be moving from elsewhere in the U.S. or they may be coming from abroad. But you know, there's a mix of both, but there's no doubt that there, you know, when you look at Indianapolis population change, there was almost a one for one change between the non-Hispanic white population in the county declined by about 55,000 people, and the Hispanic population increased by about 51,000. So there you see those two subgroups kind of offset one another. Then there's also strong growth in the black population, as well as pretty significant growth in the Asian population. So you're seeing that Indianapolis is becoming much more diverse, you know, over the last 10 years.
We are talking about Indy at the Crossroads here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, Joe. Your question, please.
Well, I've lived in Indianapolis all my life, and I'm a Southsider. And I'm also directly involved with a lot of the projects for the Super Bowl. So, I mean, I appreciate everything that's going on in the city right now. Mm-hmm. My concern is that one of the biggest changes I've noticed in our city's makeup is the bike lanes that have been put in. Culturally, it's great. If we were in a city like Minneapolis, that this is deeply enrooted in the culture, it would be fine to add bike lanes. But I haven't noticed any direction on how to use these bike lanes. I haven't seen any direction for drivers. So I guess I'm concerned about the safety there. And we put all the bike lanes in, yet I've been asking for a sidewalk of the city in a stretch with Stop 11 so that kids can actually travel safely, because the streets are so busy and I can't get anything done on that. So I guess I'm just kind of curious as to what thought process went into the bike lanes, how much public communication has been done, and how do we get other infrastructure things handled, bike and sidewalks?
Good question, Joe. We'll try to get an answer for you. Thanks for the call. Brian Payne, I think that one speaks to you as the guy who first mentioned bikes on this program and riding.
Well, we at CIC have created with the city the Indianapolis Cultural Trail, a legacy of Gene and Marilyn Glick. Now, that's not a bike lane. That's actually a separated trail throughout downtown. But we're big bicycle advocates, and we think this development of bike lanes is hugely important. You can't have a bike culture if you don't have safe bike infrastructure. So the infrastructure comes first, the culture comes next, and we're already seeing a huge jump in culture. But Joe is right. We have this, you know, the city writ large, I'm not talking about the city administration or any one organization. We all together in the city who care about bikes need to do a lot better job of educating people about how these bike lanes work, educating motorists as well as bicyclists. I'm very knowledgeable about bikes and bike lanes. I'm still confused myself every once in a while about what to do as a bicyclist or a motorist. I've talked, I mean, this conversation's ongoing. It's ongoing with the mayor's office. There's a great organization, not-for-profit, called IndyCog that is looking to play a role in this. We're looking to financially support them at the foundation to play a role. So people are aware of this disconnect as far as education, and there's efforts getting underway to launch an answer to this. So now, as far as the we're also a huge advocate for sidewalks, and I believe the mayor's office is doing overall a great job of creating that kind of connectivity with sidewalks as well. They care deeply about it. getting every sidewalk that's needed is going to take a while. So hopefully someone at the city, Joe, is listening to your specific request again on the radio here. But there's a lot of good work that will continue around connectivity, both by sidewalks and by bikes.
Tom Morales.
Yes. Joe, I want to encourage you to understand I'm part of the Metropolitan Development Commissioner, and every new development that's proposed to us, I'm going to say it's required that some sort of sidewalk is invested in somehow, or the infrastructure is put in place. So the city itself is very, very adamant about getting that proposal through almost any new development that occurs and such. And so it'll take a while, but any move forward is a positive move right now.
Now, is some of this, and we're talking about India at the crossroads and it sort of Indian transition right now, on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email, nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Is some of what's going on here that we are making a transition from being probably outside of maybe Southern California, one of the most car-driven cultures in the country right now, where, I mean, there was, I remember not all that long ago, there was active scorn of the idea that we'd invest in anything like public transportation or bike lanes or anything like that. And we're now trying to do kind of a 180 pivot and get there. Does that account for part of the problem, Brian Payne?
Absolutely. We are in this moment of huge transition. And I think the reason why so many people feel like it's an important transition ultimately to make and to make as fast as we can is these numbers. We are going to lose population. We're going to lose all kinds of population across the board if people cannot get around efficiently. And for actually young professionals, young people, it's a kind of a moral lifestyle decision. I mean, they morally believe mm-hmm. that they should get around mm-hmm. not in individual cars that burn carbon. I have a 13-year-old son. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I go over the speed limit, he'll say, "Dad, you're going over the speed limit."
My answer is, someone else has that experience.
My answer is, it's safe. And he says, "It's not a matter of safety, Dad. You're burning too much carbon." I mean, he's 13. Yeah. They're growing up in a world in which they're hyper-conscious of this. 20-somethings will not come to Indianapolis if the only way they can get around is own a car. They have other choices. They'll go to cities where they have vibrant, vital mass transit systems and bicycle infrastructure. We will lose talent if we don't solve this problem.
Well, and that's the other thing that I was going to talk about, too, is obviously there's a measure in front of the Indiana General Assembly right now to create a mass transit, a much more integrated mass transit system than we have had in this city. And, you know, while there is some initial progress and all of that, I don't think anyone's under the illusion that it's not going to be a difficult push to do it. How important is that to Indianapolis and the metropolitan area's development? Well, Brian Payne, I'll bring it back to you and then Tom.
In full disclosure, we at the Central Indiana Community Foundation have given $200,000 so far in grants. And we're on the I'm on the transit task force. So we believe in it so much we're putting our time and our money behind it. Again, because our overall frame for Indianapolis is how do we thrive in the 21st century as a city? We thrive by developing our citizens into highly talented, highly educated, highly creative people, and by attracting the best and the brightest from other places. Our own people will leave. No one will come here if they don't have the quality of life in the 21st century that includes vibrant transit and multimodal, including bicycle systems.
Mm-hmm. Tom Morales, how important is?
Very important. And I think the city is very much in tune and aware. And there's a lot within the regional authorities and everything else that are going on. The emphasis is this, as Brian was saying, is we're not only going to lose, but to attract them. I mean, these 20-year-olds are wanting to, are coming from other cities, migrating mm-hmm. here, realizing that they can raise their families at a much less cost, and still, they want to have those mass transits or those abilities to travel without having a vehicle. I mean, it is just a way of life for them. And, you know, as much as we think that, you know, and even when people are applauded when they have more than one rider in their car. I mean, that whole thing is just a simplicity of how we utilize our own resources. So, but yes, it's definitely an issue, and one that I know it's being addressed, but the reality of it is I'm not sure what the barriers are besides the cost. So.
We are talking about India at the Crossroads here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Some of this, I'm also gathering, I mean, when we're talking about mass transit and all of that, is it a mistake to think of where we are right now simply as an Indianapolis problem or an Indianapolis strategy? I mean, we've seen Hamilton County is really part of the Indianapolis metropolitan area now. In some way, it's like an adjunct or an add-on. Many of the donut counties are the same way. I mean, do we need to think more regionally rather than as part of a city? Tom Morales?
Yes. I'll start out with the fact that, yeah, we do. In thinking, we have that connectivity. And that's the thing, from getting from one point to the other, and to say it's just within the city limits. And it's hard. I've been here over 50 years, and I've seen it, a lot of changes. But the reality of it is it used to be one thoroughfare, north, south, east, west, and now we have so many different ones. But the difficulty is still from getting from one point to the other, and that really creates the sort of the environment of opportunity. And so there's no real hesitancy in whether I live downtown or whether I live on the suburbs, because there is that chance of getting back and forth much, much more readily.
Brian Payne.
Yeah, we absolutely do need to do a better job of embracing regionalism in every aspect of our community. I mean, the fact that we have this kind of, I'll say it's a ridiculous rivalry between Marion County and Hamilton County, between Indianapolis and Carmel. I mean, my life is enhanced by a dynamic downtown Carmel. My life is personally enhanced by being able to go to a Noblesville and have a great downtown, urban, interesting, historic experience. If Eli Lilly's trying to attract someone, they'll be more successful getting a top scientist if that scientist has a choice of either living downtown or a nice Meridian Kessler or a nice downtown Carmel or a nice downtown or suburban Noblesville. That's,
or frankly, even buying an old farmhouse somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, choices. People want choices. We need Carmel to thrive. Carmel needs Indianapolis to thrive. We got to get rid of this silly 96th Street boundary, and we need to think bigger as a region. And it's culturally going to represent a significant change of thought.
We are talking about Indy at the Crossroads here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. James, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Your question, please.
Well, Mark, I used to live downtown at Paul Creek Place. And I have to admit that one of the reasons why we no longer live downtown is that we took a look at the education situation, and more so high school. And we just figured that the cost of high school was going private was just too expensive. But we didn't want to spend that kind of money at such an early part of the education process. So that's one thing I think that they need to address if they want to have a viable downtown.
Okay.
Somewhat to school systems.
Thank you for the call, James. We will take it up in a moment. We are talking about Indy at the Crossroads here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. I am John Kroll. We're talking with Brian Payne of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, Tom Morales, who is with Morales Group, and Matt Kinghorn, who is an analyst and demographer with the Indiana Business Research Center. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and executive editor of thestatehousefile.com. We are talking today about Indy at the Crossroads with our guest, Brian Payne, who is the president, CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, Tom Morales, who is the president of the Morales Group, and Matt Kinghorn, who is an analyst and demographer with the Indiana Business Research Center. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Just before we went to the break to thank the people who helped make this program possible, We got a call from a listener named James who was talking about how education really affected his decision to live downtown. Brian Payne, you wanted to respond to that.
Well, so here's the issue right now is that there's this incredible high school called Heron High School. Mm-hmm. At 16th, you know, we're not too far from where we are here at WFYR, 16th and Pennsylvania, and 16th and Delaware, right between the two streets. It's an incredible high school, and I know people whose kids are going to private middle schools who are deciding, not because of financial reasons, to go to Heron High School. So that could have been a great option for James. Mm-hmm. But here's the bad news. There's a waiting list, and so mm-hmm. James wouldn't be assured that his son could have gotten in just because of the numbers. So that kind of uncertainty, how do you plan? You want to stay downtown. You want to stay in Fall Creek Place. You want your kid to go to this school, but even though it has a great reputation, you don't know if they can get in. So what do? You go to the sure thing and you move out to the, in this case, I know James, he moved out to Washington Township, but he could have moved out to the suburbs.
What is the solution, at least at the state level, it's a voucher program, basically, is their argument. Is that going to solve our educational challenge here in Indianapolis? We've also gotten an email question from a listener named Carrie, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who's parent of a five-year-old who's starting school, and really says she loves living in Indianapolis and all of that, but it concludes by saying, it is my opinion that the biggest reason why people leave the city is the poor performance of IPS. Do you think the city, county, and state will ever take aggressive, proactive measures to fix IPS? Brian Payne, Tom Morales, I don't see that's...
we at CICF are big supporters of the Mind Trust, who...
Mm-hmm. We've had David Harris here on the program.
So David and his team at the Mind Trust and his incredibly astute board have come out with this plan that they make a lot of recommendations around what IPS could do better to be more successful. And it's really decentralizing a lot of the services at IPS, giving students and teachers and principals more flexibility. They also are big proponents and have a charter school incubator. Mm-hmm. It's not just the Mind Trust. There are a lot of other mm-hmm. good ideas. I think the vouchers have I used to be 10 years ago completely against the voucher system. Now I'm about 80% for it. Mm-hmm. We have to give parents choices. And if they live in Marion County, you have to have the confidence that you will be able to access a school that is right for your child and that's high quality, no matter where you live in Marion County.
We are talking about Indy at the Crossroads here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Walter, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Your question, please.
Yes, sir. By the way, I'm an advocate of Mr. Brian there getting into high political office. He'll remember me, I think. The point is that I have mentioned this to other people. The homeschooling movement is not subject to this the pressures that you're speaking about the educational system, and therefore they have a geographical independence. And would find it, I think, very comfortable to live within the city. So I have mentioned this to Jackie Needis and to some other people that those entities, the city or whatever, the neighborhood groups, buy a booth at the homeschooling convention, which goes on for a couple of days at the convention center in June, and preach to them and appeal to them.
Good question, good comment. Thanks for the call, Walter. Is homeschooling, is that part of the solution, do you think, Tom Morales?
If I could start, matter of fact, my wife homeschooled three of my kids. So in that regard, and then we did go to the public schools, but again, in the suburbs as such. The reality of it is that the acceptance of what that education is all about, and I think it's changed dramatically from years past.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting back to what Brian said earlier. The word was choice.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's the connectivity, whether it's the transportation, whether it's the ability to get to one point to the other, we know for a fact that the IPS system has been reviewed, been analyzed, has been drawn upon from the state level to the city level, and there's a lot of good people that are working to try to resolve this issue. The vouchers, I still think, and as well as the charter schools that are, again, change sometimes is hard to receive, and the reality of it is that those changes are needed in order to have those choices. Those changes are needed in order for us to get away from what we sort of have fallen into. It's just the status quo. And so I do support a lot of the homeschoolers, but again, the acceptance that it's done as far as the certification, the accreditation, things like that. And again, they're drawing much closer to that than they have in the past. So yes.
It is interesting being at in my other life at a college, seeing the numbers of applications we get from homeschooled students now. It's just rising dramatically. I'm going to try. We're getting a lot of calls, tweets, and emails right now, so I'm going to try to move through them quickly. We've gotten one from Taylor who tweets, "Crossroads of entertainment. How do we get locals to support indie theater other than when Fringe is on?" Brian Payne.
Well,
I know that's one of your passions.
It is. We're a huge supporter. I used to run the Indiana Repertory Theater as the managing director, and we helped start the Fringe, which is great. But to be real, the Fringe draws about 10,000 or 12,000 people a year, which is good and very successful. The IRT, though, will draw 100,000 people a year. But that's not enough. I always tell young professionals, you want to make an impact on this community? Buy tickets to the arts. We have an incredible philanthropic response to the arts here, both with individuals and with foundations, most prominently Lilly Endowment, which has been really the reason why we have such first-class and sometimes world-class arts organizations. But what everyone needs to do, who can afford to buy a ticket, and there's always discounts available, is to buy a ticket and support these by buying tickets and showing up and being part of the audience and part of the infrastructure of arts, and then it'll grow, and then it'll be what we want it to be.
We are talking about Indy at the Crossroads here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly.
I am born and raised a Hoosier. However, I moved out of Indiana in 1982, recently moved back last year to take a job in downtown Indianapolis. I moved here from San Francisco, California. And I might as well have moved to Mars or from Mars, because culturally speaking, it seems that this is a hyper-conservative environment called Indiana. And I think if you're going to attract the 20 to 30-something talent, Indiana is going to have to figure out how to be a lot more liberal and progressive in many areas. And one example, and then I'll just...
What areas are you talking about, Mark?
Well, for example, this is 2012, and we're still debating whether smoking is bad for you. And California is laughing at Indianapolis. You know what? It's bad for you. It needs to be banned in the entire state of Indiana in every facility, except for possibly tribal or Indian-owned casinos, like in California. We're still debating the issue. Do we allow it in bars? Do we allow it in certain types of clubs? California figured it out a long time ago. Wear your helmet when you're riding a bike. It's okay to buy alcohol on Sundays. Guess what? Smoking is bad. And Indiana needs to be a lot more progressive and liberal, and that probably will do more to attract the 20 to 30-something-year-old talents who want to come here or come to a place where it's more hip, it's more progressive, and more liberal. And Indianapolis has a long, long way to go. It's a great city, greatly improved. I'm happy to be back. But having lived all over the United States in the last 10 years in San Francisco, I can tell you Indianapolis has a tremendously long road ahead of it to compete with cities such as, like, in my opinion, San Francisco, Boston, Los Angeles.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Well, and let me sort of synthesize that for a little bit. In some ways, what Mark's saying is, have we completely killed the Naptown image? You know, the idea that the famous story about the flight attendant landing the plane saying, "You've just arrived in Indianapolis, set your watches back an hour or 25 years, whichever you prefer." Have we eliminated that, or is there still work to be done there? Tom Morales and then Brian Payne.
Okay. I believe we have eliminated a lot. Now, I realize that the specifics that Mark spoke about are, again, the word progressive, liberal. I think we all have our opinions on what that is, but the changes do need to occur, and have they? I remember the Indiana No Place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that reality is not here anymore. There's no doubt in my mind that those changes occur. Now, I don't know that the progress is enough for everybody, but I do know the steps we've taken to attract, to keep growing are those things that not only are the governor, the city, are working diligently at. And so we are looking at the specifics, whether it's the arts, whether it's the culture, whether it's diversity. I know San Francisco, where Mark was, he had all the different groups that you can imagine under one metropolitan area. And that's where we're growing as well.
Brian Payne, real quickly.
Well, I'm a native Californian who lived 75 miles south of San Francisco for 8 years, and every place is more conservative than San Francisco. But he is right. So I don't want us to be San Francisco, mm-hmm. but I do want us to be more progressive. And certainly the smoking issue is dead right on that one. And you know what California does so well is it invites everyone, mm-hmm. no matter who they are and what they're like, to come in there and try to be able to succeed at the best that they possibly can, whether they're gay, whether they're an immigrant, whether they're have long hair. We do need to be a place that invites and welcomes all talent, mm-hmm. and all kinds of people. And I think Indianapolis is on the right direction. I believe the State House, mm-hmm. the General Assembly, has got it all wrong. Mm-hmm. But I think Indianapolis mostly has it right.
Matt Kinghorn, do the numbers show us along these lines if there are specific deterrents that keep some people from moving to Indianapolis, central Indiana area?
Well, the numbers wouldn't show some of that fine grain decision making. But I think that Indianapolis is already doing as Brian mentioned earlier, and we've talked about, is it's despite some of these drawbacks that the caller mentioned there, that it still does draw a lot of young adults. There's no doubt about that. So I think that doesn't mean that it couldn't be more successful. It couldn't draw more large employers. It would attract more young adults. But I think that it's already doing a fairly good job in that regard.
Colt, welcome to the program. How are you
Hi.
Doing?
I'm doing all right.
That's good.
My question was about the updating of the public transit system.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there have been a lot of work going on as far as where the stops would be. I'm located in Anderson, and I'm initially from the Indy area. But I didn't know if there was any word on how he was going to try to draw all of central Indiana in and being able to connect us with the Indianapolis area.
We will toss that one to Brian Payne. Thanks for the call, Colt.
I mean, I know that's the big vision in the future. Right now, it's focused on Marion County and Hamilton County. That's where there's enough critical mass, where we think usership will be big enough to support a system. It's where some of the existing infrastructure already exists. You always have to build on your assets. And there's assets in Marion and Hamilton County that can connect. Those assets are not... they're just not in existence to connect at this point all the way out to Anderson or to Muncie.
We're talking about Indy at the crossroads here on No Limits. Elena, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Your question, please.
Well, I just wanted to add to the comment about the education system and IPS. I'm a teacher, and I don't teach in IPS, but I teach high school, and I think that IPS can't just fix itself from within. Without more funding, the state's going to have to figure out how to give those schools more funding so that they can actually hire enough people to do their jobs and support the community. Also, cutting music programs, cutting extracurriculars, how is that helping the students? They already don't want to be there. Take away the one class they actually enjoy. Why else would they show up?
Thanks for the question, Elena. Brian Payne.
I couldn't agree more with Elena. I think she's absolutely right. It's ridiculous that we're cutting the things that make students, especially if you think about students and their challenges emotionally, trying to find out who they are in the 21st century, in the year 2012. It's a huge challenge. The things that help them do that best are arts and music programs. What are we doing? We're cutting that out. It's ridiculous.
Do we, how much of the problem, Brian, you made the comment couple of minutes ago that the Indiana General Assembly at some level is the one that doesn't, the body that doesn't get it right now. Tom, do you agree with that, or is that...
Actually, knowing that I might get in trouble with this one, but anyway, yes, I do agree. I think the efforts that are being done are now financially, we could say that the state of Indiana, compared to the surrounding states, is kept the educational piece. I'm part of the SASE group, again, that the monies that go to the different scholarships. But the whole point of it is that the intent has to be that there's a commitment made, and so funds are one thing. I think the evaluations, the research that they're doing in order to get these back to basics is one thing, but the arts and everything else, as Brian was sharing, it's just that what do we do to attract, to keep individuals? I mean, each one of us had that teacher. Each one of us had that certain situation that we wanted to keep.
Brian Payne, I give you about 20 seconds to get the last word.
I think
the thing,
we have a lot of good things to celebrate at the state level. State government has a lot of victories that they can celebrate over the last 7 years. But one thing that we cannot celebrate is the fact that on a per capita income level, we continue to fall back even against our Midwestern neighbors. And why is that? Because we're not developing our people, and we're not developing all of our people. And we have to really seize the opportunity to develop our talent better. And Elaine and others, Mark from San Francisco, are pointing to things that are barriers for us at the state level.
We have been talking about Indy at the Crossroads and really the challenges before Indianapolis and Central Indiana with our guests, Brian Payne. Brian, glad you were with us today. Thank you very much. Tom Morales, who's the president of the Morales Group. Tom, thank you for joining us. Matt Kinghorn, who's with the Indiana Business Research Center. Matt, thank you for being part of the program.
My pleasure.
I apologize to all the listeners whose questions we did not get to. We're going to have these guys back so that we can deal with all of it. See you next week. Thank you.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.